This is the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast.
I was on a ship in the middle of the Middle East somewhere and really started making a plan for my future investments.
You're listening to the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast, where we discuss tangible tips, tricks, and best practices for becoming financially free. The show is designed for people who want to either start real estate investing or for those who want to scale their real estate business.
What's going on, everyone? This is Jonathan Farber, your host of the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast. I hope you're all well and healthy. For any first-time listeners, thanks for being here. The goal of this show is to explore ways to become financially free through real estate or to increase passive cash flow through real estate. A little background on myself. I work in corporate America at a software company. My side hustle is real estate. I currently own 8 rental units and looking to add more this spring. I have house hacked, bird, flipped, and done short-term rentals to name a few strategies. My current focus is 20 to 30 unit apartment buildings in Ohio and Kentucky. I love to network and learn, so if you'd like to connect further, feel free to find me on LinkedIn, Facebook, or BiggerPockets. Let's get to today's show sponsor. After building my own portfolio, speaking with over 100 investors on this podcast, and many more from the Facebook group, I've noticed a few common themes of why people don't get started or remain successful in real estate. They don't have the right team, they aren't sure of their market, or they don't know where to find deals. The people at Martell Turnkey are fixing this. That's why they offer fully turnkey properties in markets where the numbers actually make sense. What does this mean? It means they buy properties at a discount, fix them up, put a tenant in place, and oh yeah, give you options for property management or financing. They have people on the ground in cities where you can still cash flow and see appreciation every single month. I'll say it as simply as this. When you have the right team and systems in place, there's no reason not to get started. If you like a property or have any questions, you can schedule a phone call by clicking on the link below or going on their website and clicking on the contact tab to set up a call. There is no hard sell, push, or commitment needed. The call will be there to answer any questions you have or to see if or how their products might be a good fit for you and what you're looking for. So visit martellturnkey.com and click contact or send an email to info@martellturnkey.com today. What's going on, guys? Today we have an awesome episode with Brian Briscoe. Brian is based in Maryland. He has a military background, Marine Corps specifically. He has a broad experience with different parts of real estate, but started with 2 single family homes and scaled now to 250 multifamily apartment building units. We go through how he did that, what mentors he had, what coaching programs he was a part of, what his steps were, how he thinks you can get started doing a similar path while still working in a W-2 job. He still has a W-2 job to this day, along with some of his partners. And we talked through that as well, about going through leaving, staying, the benefits, pros, cons, all that. So really interesting. And I learned a lot, especially as I am a W-2 employee considering which path is best for me. The main learning from this episode for me was how he found his partners and decided who would do what in each part of the business. We actually do a segment of the show where we go through the main roles needed in, I'd say, successful real estate investing or specifically apartment building investing, such as acquisitions and raising capital and underwriting or analysis and all the things, and how he decided who was going to do what and if there was any overlap of the people he had already assigned to parts of his deals, and then deciding if it was going to change or stay the same over time, which it has changed. And he goes into that. Today's tangible tip: raising capital, as Brian talks about in the show, is just expanding your network. I loved how he explained that. And as I've learned more about raising capital and raising capital myself and talked to other people that are much more successful at it than I am, have done a lot bigger raises than I've ever even considered, is it's not such a scary, daunting task to them. It's not a sales pitch. It's not a sale even at all. It's really just having relationships, letting people know what you're doing. And then when you have opportunities, just presenting them and letting people know. It's not scary. You don't have to say the right words and say everything perfect. It's just building up a big enough group of people that believe in you, trust you, know what you're doing, and then presenting them with opportunities when they come. And he talks about that. And it really just clicked with me the way he used the exact wording that he did. But for anyone out there that's intimidated by raising capital, I would just challenge you to learn more about how the best are doing it and just constantly improve your network and let people know what you're doing. Most times you won't even have to ask for money. If you just let people know, they will offer to give you money. So yeah, just that one I thought was really powerful. So anyway, without any further ado, episode today with Brian Briscoe. All right, Brian, what is going on? Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate your time and appreciate the invitation.
Absolutely. And just talking a little before we hit record, I have a feeling this is going to be a good one, not to set the bar too high, but your background, I think, relates to a lot of listeners of this show. We'll get into all that of scaling and getting to multifamily and what you've done, what you're doing today. But as we do with most guests, start with the beginning of how you got into this. So for those that aren't too familiar with your story, you mind just giving a quick background from a high level on how you got into real estate, and then also from a high level, bring us up to speed on what the business is today?
Yeah, I think, if we're looking high level, I think we have to talk about my military career first. You know, that's something that really helped me decide to do real estate. So I was a college student. I was a graduate student trying to get a PhD in math, of all things. You know, I had a master's degree in math, trying to get a PhD. At the time, I was also a reservist in the Marine Corps. You know, lots of reasons drove me to that. But I was a reservist in the Marine Corps on September 11th when the World Trade Center went down. And obviously, it was more than just the World Trade Center. You know, Pentagon got hit as well. And I decided then that, you know, hey, I'm a reservist. You know, I went into the reserves so that if the nation needed me, I'd be ready, you know. And so there I was, you know, already trained, you know, as a basic Marine. And I decided, you know what, I'm not going to wait for the reserve unit to get called up. I'm just going to take things into my own hands and I'm going to volunteer for active service. So called up the active recruiter, and a couple months later I was at officer candidate school, and I've been active duty ever since, you know. But first duty station was Okinawa, Japan, and you know, in Okinawa, I remember reading Rich Dad Poor Dad, and that kind of lit a fire, you know, like it does for a lot of people. I remember reading it, and he talks a lot about different investment opportunities. You know, he talks about stocks, he talks about, you know, multifamily and commercial real estate in general. And I remember reading that book and sitting down and thinking, man, commercial real estate sounds difficult. I don't even know where to start, you know, can't do that, you know? And then it's like, well, you know, and I started narrowing things down to something that I could do, and single family houses was it. I'm like, you know what? I'm active duty. I move every 2 to 3 years. And as long as I stay active duty, I'm going to move every 2 to 3 years. I'm like, what better thing for me than to move, pick up a house, live in it for a year or two, move again, rent that house out, buy another one. So that was my strategy. Bought the first house in 2007. Bought my second house in 2008 after the crash, you know, and then tried to buy another house in 2009, but lending was so strict that banks wouldn't give me a loan. You know, they said I was overextended. My debt to income ratio wasn't good enough. So, you know, long story short, got into single family houses because I wanted a way to, you know, create wealth for myself. You know, I wanted a way to be able to eventually produce the passive income that would allow me to have the time freedom that I wanted. I had always intended on buying more, but, you know, I deployed in 2009. 2010 was a year where, you know, I had a lot of responsibility at my work. I was in a leadership position. I knew I'd be deploying again in 2011. And so most of that year was spent, you know, getting a company of Marines ready to deploy again. So 2011 was another wash. We deployed, you know, and long story short, I kind of lost sight of my goal. You know, I kind of lost sight of what I was trying to do. You know, we moved to a very expensive area in California. You know, we looked at buying a house there, but the numbers were just the wrong side, you know. So $600,000 for the average single family house that would rent for, you know, $2,800, you know, wasn't going to work. So bottom line, you know, I always had the goal and the burning desire to purchase more real estate. You know, it just didn't happen as quickly as I wanted to. And did another overseas tour, spent a year living in Rio. You know, obviously, you know, buying a house in Rio, renting out wasn't an option for me. So, you know, a lot of things got in the way, and, you know, ended up deploying again in 2016. And that's really where I went and put pen to paper. And I thought, okay, you know, I started well, I bought two houses in 2 years, and I got completely sidetracked. And so I was on a deployment. I was on a ship in the middle of the Middle East somewhere, and really started making a plan for my future investments, and read a bunch of books. You know, a couple of them really helped me to, you know, once again, rekindle that fire. And so I sat down and I thought, okay, here's my passive income goal. How many single family houses is it going to take? You know, so I looked in the area that I wanted to invest in. I looked at the average rent prices, the average sale price, you know, home prices, and built a spreadsheet. And what I found was, it was going to take me roughly 50 to 60 single family properties to be able to never have to work again. You know, and then I started scratching my head. I'm like, gosh, you know, my plan includes 20% down payment on all of these. I'm like, how am I going to do that? You know, I can maybe come up with, you know, one down payment every year. I'm like, that's 50 to 60 years from now. I'm going to be dead before I get there. So, you know, long story short, you know, that kind of got me thinking about other ways, you know, more creative ways. Kept on reading books and more books. I started looking, hey, maybe I'll do this subject to thing. You know, it doesn't require a lot of capital. You know, maybe I'll do the BRRRR method, you know, the buy, rent, rehab, refinance. You know, I don't remember what all the R's stand for, but, you know, so I started looking at alternate ways where I didn't have to use my own capital. And I stumbled across a book on multifamily, and that kind of really, the light went on at that moment. I mean, that book for me was like Rich Dad, Poor Dad was, you know, in 2005 when I read it. So, light went on and I thought, wow, this multifamily thing, you know, I can buy 60 doors in one transaction. You know, I can buy 100 doors in one transaction instead of buying 60 doors one at a time. You know, it was anyway, the light went on, and that's when I really started doubling down on multifamily.
So just right there, we'll dig into more of it, but yeah. Can you just then from a high level, bring us up to speed on, we'll get into the, like I said, the nuts and bolts, but where now you are with multifamily from that point of deciding you were going to go into multifamily.
So from that point, I mean, there's a lot of education. You can't just, you know, I remember touring a couple of properties. You know, my in-laws live in Idaho Falls. We were staying there for a while. Stuff's relatively affordable. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to buy a place in Idaho Falls. And I remember I was there on, I had like 2 weeks of leave. And so I talked to a bunch of bankers, toured a bunch of properties. And I remember walking out of one of these properties, just scratching my head and thinking, I don't even know if this is a good deal. I mean, I don't even know how to figure out if this is a good deal. Am I going to make money on this? I don't know. You know, and that made me realize that I needed to do a little bit more on the education side. So, you know, I bought into one of those, the pay to play mentoring programs. And, you know, for me, that was extremely beneficial because I had somebody show me how to analyze a property and how to determine whether a property would make money, you know, what my maximum offer price should be and everything. So, number one, that gave me the know-how. It also gave me the confidence to be able to do it. And it was through that program where I met my current partners. So, you know, since then we've closed on 250 units, all of them in South Carolina right now, worth about $12 million. And in the process, we've raised, you know, roughly $8 million to do it. You know, so I'd say our bread and butter is we like to buy a property that needs a little bit of TLC. You know, something that, you know, maybe hasn't been renovated in the past 15 years, something that hasn't been managed very efficiently, pick it up, do a little bit of, you know, light to medium renovations, turn it around, and, you know, in 3 to 5 years, you know, sell it for a profit and move on to the next. So that's kind of our bread and butter. That's kind of what we look for. But like I said, you know, from that moment in 2000, you know, 16, 17, when I read the first book till now, you know, 250 units, you know, 12 million worth of 12 million in purchase price.
Got it. Okay. So going back to the beginning to make it, I guess, just a little more tangible. So for the listener that's looking at your story and just saying how can I do this, but bringing it back to your story specifically from making that direct change, it seems like the big step for you was entering into the mentoring program. So can you talk us a little bit of through how you either found them, decided that that's what you needed? Because a lot of listeners on the show are wondering if they should do that or not. So for you specifically, how did you decide you needed a program? And then how did you decide on a specific program to get into?
Well, you know, that was a very slow process, actually. You know, I've always been a smart kid. And I think a lot of times, you know, when I was growing up, you know, I had a hard time taking advice, you know, and I had determined that I was going to be able to do this by myself. I'd buy myself, you know, a fiveplex or a 10 unit apartment or something like that, you know, and I would learn by doing, and then I would use that to be able to scale. You know, that was kind of the first moment. So for about a year, you know, it was me reading books. It was me listening to podcasts. You know, and everywhere I was going, I had my headphones in and I was listening to a podcast. You know, if I was at the gym, I had my headphones in, I was listening to a podcast or an audiobook. You know, if I was driving or on my motorcycle, you know, headphones in, listening to podcasts. And I'd take notes and I would cross-reference my notes and I'd say, okay, episode number 222 of, you know, Rod Cleave's podcast talks about this. You know, and I kind of sort things into, you know, how, like the order of doing apartments. But like I said, it was really when I was walking out of one of those apartment buildings thinking I knew how to, you know, do everything because I listened to a million podcasts, where I realized, oh my gosh, you know, is this really going to make money? And how do I know? How can I be sure? You know? I was going to potentially drop a lot of cash into that building. You know, we sold right about that time. We sold our two single family houses, you know, and between the two, we walked away with $200,000+. But so I had a chunk of money I could put in, but I just realized that without knowing, it would be an extremely risky investment. And lo and behold, you know, that afternoon I'm listening to a Michael Blunt podcast and he says he advertises a online course he has, you know, and, you know, I had the money in the bank. I think it was a couple thousand dollars. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll do that, you know, and, you know, pulled out the phone and, you know, clicked a couple of buttons and got into it. So, you know, it was a very small investment, you know, relative to the purchase price of an apartment building, you know, $2,000 for an education program. I thought, wow, you know, and then I started going to events, you know, I started going to meetups and I started getting myself around other people. And the more and more I talked to people, the more I realized that almost everybody in the multifamily business had a formal or an informal mentor. You know, they either paid for mentorship to help them do it, or they found somebody who was experienced that was able to take them under their wing and show them the ropes. And that was really, I think, that the big catalyst for me saying I need more help. I mean, the online course was still, you know, Brian thinking he could do it all by himself, you know, thinking, all right, all I need is this online course, you know, and I'll figure it out. But yeah, it was one of the big networking events that I went to when I started talking to people and realizing that almost 100% of people who are successful in this business had some sort of mentor, you know, and, that's what really got me thinking. You know, I thought, you know what, if I had a mentor, that would make so many things easier. You know, if I had somebody that had a ton of experience looking over my shoulder with everything that I did, you know, that would take a lot of the risk out of the equation, you know? So I looked at the mentorship program in two different ways. Number one, it reduces the risk, you know, because anything that I was going to look at as a potential purchase, I could run by my mentor. You know, he could look over the numbers for me. He could help me walk through the comparables, you know, walk through the rents and the incomes and the expenses and everything else and tell me if I was completely out of whack. So, and the other thing, you know, reducing risk was huge, but the other thing was, I realized that a mentor would help me to accelerate my growth. Mm-hmm. So end of the day, I ended up putting, you know, a lot more money into a mentorship program, just for those reasons. You know, I wanted to reduce risk and I wanted to succeed faster.
Makes sense.
But it took me probably 2.5 years of me thinking I could do it by myself before I really made that realization that, oh my gosh, I can't do this by myself.
So that's such a valid point. Like the amount of people, I mean, you do a podcast too and have been on many, but, and speak to so many investors, not to beat this drum to death, because I talk about a lot on the show too, but that is the common theme. For anyone that asks, what is the hack? What is the one thing that you see in more real estate investors that are successful than not? It's having a mentor, having a coach, or adding value to people in a way that you can get around them and see how they operate at a high level and bring that back. It's the analogy I use on the show all the time is if you're a varsity, as if you're a junior varsity basketball player, you go to play with varsity for a couple of weeks and then you go back down to JV. The deals that you were looking at seem easy after that point because you were able to see how high level operators do it. And now you can apply whatever their mindset was, but also their tactics to a different game at a different speed. So that's just such a good point. Where I want to go next is another area that I think people think about when they're considering how to get started or how to build their team or framework, and that's partners. And there's many different partnership structures. So just we'll focus on yours in this case. So how did you decide who to partner with, what skills they were bringing to the table, and how did your partnership start with your current partners today?
So the partnership started, So Eric Shirley and Brian Mallon are two of the four partners in Four Oaks Capital. They've known each other for, you know, probably about a dozen years. So they had partnered together prior to. So I guess the beginning of Four Oaks Capital would be when those two decided to partner several years ago, you know, and they were looking at multifamily deals, but, Eric and I were both active in a multifamily forum. And in this particular forum, you know, we would share ideas, we'd share market information. And if we had a deal we were chasing, we would, you know, put the deal in front of other people and have other people basically review our analysis. So I realized that, you know, he and I were both looking in South Carolina, and I picked up the phone and I called him one day. So we had several conversations, you know, about, you know, South Carolina, different cities, different markets, different things. And one day we realized that we were talking to the same brokers. We were analyzing the same deals and we were actually putting offers in on the same deals. So we realized that we were competing. And Eric suggested, he's like, hey, look, why don't we just compare notes, and on anything that we're both interested in, let's collaborate, you know? So it started out being a small intersection of, you know, this is what I'm looking at, this is what you're looking at. If we're looking at the same thing, we'll collaborate, you know? So, and then from there, you know, we moved to kind of the next phase. We liked each other a lot. We worked together well. He often had information that I didn't, and I often had information that he didn't, you know? So we started collaborating on small things. And then pretty soon we said, okay, anything inside the Carolinas, you know, we'll partner on. So we decided to share any deal that came across our desk that was inside the Carolinas. And finally we got something under contract, and, you know, Eric, Brian and I sat down and, you know, did a self-assessment, and we said, okay, here's what you're good at. Here's what I'm good at. You know, here's all the hats we need to wear in the company. And we realized that there were a couple of areas where we overlapped, but there was a couple of areas where we needed, we felt one more person, you know, and Eric said, hey, I know a guy that might be interested. Let me introduce you to Todd. And so he brings in Todd, and we decide to partner on one deal. You know, and that was the beginning of all four of us together, was, you know, the three of us sitting down and say, we need one more person to help us bring this deal across the table. So the four of us started working together, and within 3 or 4 months, we realized that we had a really good thing going. We liked each other. Mm. You know, our goals were the same. Our outlook was the same. Our timelines were roughly the same. And, you know, we decided just to make a company that we could work exclusively for. And, you know, now all of our acquisitions are, you know, Four Oaks Capital. It's no longer four individuals. It's, you know, Four Oaks.
Can you talk a little bit more in detail about that? I just think it's so important for people to hear. So within Four Oaks, can you talk about what your core responsibilities are? And if what your original responsibilities that you talked about with your partners ended up staying true, or if that merged or kind of morphed a little bit over time, but just the different skill sets and breakouts of who does what, how did you decide who does what, and how it works?
Yeah. So at first, you know, Eric and I had a lot of overlap. You know, we were both looking for deals. You know, we were both trying to be the deal finder. And, you know, Eric was looking for deals, talking to a group of brokers. I was looking for deals, talking to a group of brokers. And the first deal was one that I found and I put under contract. Okay. So I ended up being the lead on that one. So I played the acquisitions role on that one, you know, and we had decided that after we closed on that one, I would move and therefore be the asset manager. All right. And because I knew the deal the best, I had the most information, I did all the due diligence. So I'd move from the acquisitions role to the asset management role. You know, and Eric would move into the acquisitions role for future acquisitions of the company. Now, the reason we did that is I work at the Pentagon and, you know, I can't at the drop of the hat travel to look at properties. You know, there's certain obligations on my time. And I was making the asset manager thing work, but Eric and I had a talk about it, and his job was a medical device salesman. And he still worked for the same company, but he would travel over around the Carolinas, you know, selling medical devices. So his day job had enough flexibility where if he wanted to go to Greenville to look at a property, you know, he'd just look at his day job schedule and say, hey, I'm in Greenville next Tuesday because I'm talking to, you know, these three doctors. And he'd call the brokers and say, hey, I'm in Greenville next Tuesday. Let's meet, let's talk. So just because of you know, the unique situation he was in, it made perfect sense to make him our acquisitions director. And, you know, he's phenomenal at it. So yeah, we looked at, you know, what we were good at, number one, and, you know, what our time allowed us to do. You know, Todd, he ended up being our principal capital raiser, and Brian Mallon runs essentially everything else. You know, he's got his hands in just about every piece of the business. He runs our finances, he runs our investor portal, he runs, you know, a ton of stuff that you know, the other three of us either aren't good at or don't have time. He runs our website, everything. But so we looked at what we were naturally good at, what we had time for. And I think there was at one point where things had to change. And that was the one significant shift. COVID happened, right? And my job at the Pentagon changed. So inside the Pentagon, they had a bunch of groups, a bunch of task forces, what we call them, that were created to deal with the COVID problem. And I got moved from my, you know, regular 8-to-4 job where I had a substantial amount of flexibility to a COVID task force where I was, you know, from sun up to sundown inside the Pentagon. So I went from a very flexible job to where I could still manage, you know, a couple of apartment buildings to a very rigid, inflexible job where I was stuck inside the Pentagon for 12 to 14 hours a day. So when that happened, that's when we made our first big shift. You know, we sat down, we looked at, you know, who's got the time availability, who's got the skill set. And so we moved Todd to the asset manager position, and I ended up becoming the director of content and marketing, which is something that, you know, even though I was in the Pentagon for 12 hours a day, it was something I could do in my off time. And it was things that really didn't require me to be on phone calls during business hours. So that was the biggest shift. And we've basically maintained those roles since. I think the next big shift will come, you know, about, you know, 8.5 months from now when I retire from the Marine Corps, where, you know, I'll have more time available to do more.
I have a question on that, but before we go there, as far as staying in a job, leaving a job, can you just very quickly define the main roles of a multifamily syndication business. Mm-hmm. What they are by title and what the words actually mean for, let's say, a beginner listener that's not sure what acquisitions means, or all that asset management.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things you always have to do. All right. So if you want to be a company that's continuing to grow, you have to have somebody who's finding the new deals. Okay. Somebody who's acquiring new deals. And that's what we call our acquisitions manager or director of acquisitions. Okay. So, and the acquisitions role is, finding the deals. So they're talking with brokers, and their role essentially goes until you close. And at closing, there's a handoff between the acquisitions director and the asset manager. Okay. The asset manager is basically the guy who's, once we own a property, make sure that we can execute the business plan. All right. So the asset manager is dealing with the property managers, dealing with the construction, any contractors that come in. So, like I said, we're doing, light to medium value adds, which, include, maybe new countertops and everything, new flooring and what have you. So the asset manager is the person who basically executes the business plan. And their roles, that there's a lot of collaboration between those roles, your acquisitions manager is always looking for the next project, so here's an apartment building that we're looking at. We're going to be doing X, we're going to be doing Y, we're going to be doing Z, we're going to improve the landscaping, we're going to repave the parking lot, we're going to put new siding, we're going to redo the roofs, we're going to put new countertops and laminate vinyl flooring on the inside. But the asset manager is the one that has to execute that. So all during the due diligence process, our acquisitions guy and our asset manager are working together to make sure that they're on the same page. All right. Because once we own the property, the asset manager picks up the responsibility for executing the business plan that the acquisitions guy, basically came up with. So those are two of the roles, acquisitions and then asset manager. There's also capital raising, so we do the syndication model, which essentially, we're not coming up with all the money required to close. We can get a loan for about 75% of the purchase price. So the property we just closed on, $3.5 million property, we had to bring $1.5 million to the table, $1.5 million. Some of that's our own money, but the rest of it is from other investors. So there's somebody who has to focus on bringing the money to the table, and that's investor relations, that's content creation. And a lot of that's what I do now is, I'm very active on LinkedIn. I'm very active on Instagram now. And not as much on Facebook, but trying to bring that my game up in that on that platform too. And the idea for the capital raiser is you got to be able to attract more and more investors, and be able to bring more and more money to the table. So I would say those are probably the three primary roles, a capital raiser, an asset manager, and an acquisition specialist. You don't necessarily need three people to do it. I've seen smaller operations do it with two, where each person has multiple hats, And then one more I would say is investor relations, and that can be a capital raiser responsibility. But, end of the day, you're going to be providing, monthly summaries or quarterly reports to your investors. And you've got to make sure that the people who've invested in your properties know exactly what's going on and are happy with their investment.
For Four Oaks, what are the main ways that you guys currently find deals and the main ways that you guys currently raise capital?
So finding deals, we go through brokers, and Eric is very good at networking. He's very personable, and he'll call a lot of brokers, and there's a handful of brokers that we work with more than others, but we probably got three different brokerages that have brought us the majority of the deals that we've done or we've even looked at. So broker's number one. And let's see, what was, Okay. So raise, the other question is capital raising. Capital. So raising capital is just expanding your network. You know, do everything you can to expand your network. So, you know, the podcast is part of that. You know, our podcast, you know, we just hit our 10,000 download mark. So, you know,
nice, we've got
thanks. We got a fair amount of listeners on that. You know, we've been doing it since July, but the podcast is part of it. The social media is part of it. You know, being able to put our name in front of more and more people is our goal. So I've been on, you know, a couple dozen podcasts. You know, we've spoken at some large events that are tailored to multifamily, but as far as the capital raise, we just try to get in front of more and more people who are interested in investing in real estate. Doesn't matter how we do that. You know, one of my partners, he's brought in, I've brought more investors to the table, I think, than he has, but he's brought a lot more money to the table than I have through his investors. So he's going through his investors and asking for references to their friends. You know, hey, can you introduce me? Do you have any friends that are interested? You know, so there's a lot of ways that we're doing it. And, you know, all four of us are actually part of the capital raising train. You know, everybody we talk to where we're talking about, hey, you know, we run a multifamily investing, or we help other people invest in apartments, you know, type stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, you look at same as anything else. You look at what you're strong at, you know, and you figure out a way to make that work for you. And, you know, for me, it's been, you know, social media presence, and it's been the podcast.
Last question before we wind down and get you out of here. You mentioned yourself and one other team member, maybe the others do as well, still had or have W-2 jobs. Mm-hmm. So can you just talk us through how you think about the decision between staying in a W-2, leaving and going full-time, and if that would correlate to any advice you have to someone that's considering the same thing?
Yeah. So my case is a little different. I'm active duty military. I'm approaching my 20th year. And if you know anything about the military, once you hit your 20 year mark, you can get a pension. All right. Now it's not, you know, it's not going to set me up for life. I mean, it is a small pension. It's about 30% of what I'm making right now. So it's a little bit of money. So I guess 3 years ago, I started looking at, you know, I've got a couple of years left. You know, I could potentially retire in 2021, which I'm going to do. And so for me, this was part of my exit plan. I've always been fascinated with real estate. It's something that, you know, I can do and not feel like work, you know? So for me, this was all part of the bigger exit plan, you know? So I decided that I would build the company, you know, and we had to make some sacrifices to do it. A lot of sacrifices with my time. But, you know, it was part of the exit plan from the Marine Corps, you know? And then for other people with W-2, I mean, a lot of people, my partners, for example, you know, wanted to get out of the rat race, you know? So for them, it was the same thing where, you know, they, like I said, at the beginning, we had the same goals, and our goals were in 2 to 3 years, we wanted to get out of our W-2 jobs. So, you know, I've talked to a lot of people, you know, I've interviewed probably 50 or so people for the podcast. And I think it's a common theme that people want to get out of a W-2 job into a job that gives them more time freedom. But you know, you got to do it smartly, I think. If you have a little bit of money, you know, saved up, some people will take a leap of faith and do it. I'm a little more, you know, risk averse. So the way I did it was I want to make sure I have a W-2 income that's almost guaranteed for 3 years. And I'm going to use that 3 year period to build up the business, you know? So, I just say, if that's something you're wanting to do, you know, look at your situation carefully and determine your exit plan. You know, like I said, I know a couple from Washington that did a whole bunch of house flipping to get 1 year salary in the bank and quit their W-2 job to do real estate full time. You know, so everybody's got a different way of doing it. Just, you know, figure out what works best for your particular situation along with your level of risk tolerance. I will say this is not a get rich quick. I mean, the money funnel doesn't turn on immediately. It takes a lot of work to get to where you're getting payouts, but you know, eventually the money does come in. So if you're looking at getting rid of your W-2 job, you know, I'd say plan for probably a 2 to 3 year transition.
Last question, what are you currently working on or focused on? And then what's the best way for people to follow that journey or get connected?
Yeah, current focus right now, like I said, I was big into mentoring, big into education, or I got big into education. We're coming up with an educational platform of our own. So that's my big piece of the puzzle right now. The podcast is part of that. You know, with the podcast, we bring on an aspiring investor with an experienced investor on every episode. And there's, you know, live mentorship that happens on each podcast episode. But, you know, we did that purposely because we wanted to attract aspiring investors and eventually bring them into the educational program and platform that we're building. So that's the big thing that we're working on right now. And as far as, you know, learning more about us, you know, Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast is, you know, we release 3 episodes a week. So, you know, you can keep up with us on the podcast or the website's 4oakscapital.com.
All right. Awesome. Brian, thank you so much for coming on. This has been fun, man. Yeah. It's going to be cool to watch the journey and see what life looks like for you when you're quote unquote retired with full time and really getting after it. So thank you again for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. And, you know, I can't wait. I mean, 274 days. Double time.
It's not like you're counting or anything.
Oh, no. It's part of my goal. You know, I need to be ready. I need to be ready to retire in 274 days.
Yep. Awesome. All right. Well, Brian, thanks again. Best of luck in 2020 and beyond.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Hey, you millennial millionaire, do you want more? Then head to the Millennial Millionaires Through Real Estate Facebook group, where there are tons of step-by-step walkthroughs, tools, templates, and free networking to help you achieve financial freedom through real estate. And if you want Jonathan to help you personally reach your goals, then feel free to set up a one-on-one call in the link below or message him on any social media platform and apply to, well, work with Jonathan.